Harmony! Woo! All right, men, I just need to double check and make sure we got some men in the audience. So when I say Happy Father's Day, I need you guys to be like, all right, you ready? So here we go. Happy Father's Day! Woo! All right. Hey, turn, look at somebody and wave at them. Say, hey, I'm glad you're here. If you're online, give us a thumbs up or something. Yeah, all right. Dads, men, just men in general, can I ask you a question? How many of you love to mow the lawn? It's like your thing. Nobody. There's one. I see one person raising it. How many of you men dread mowing the lawn? It's the thing you hate the most. Can I get from you? All right. Yeah. All right. Those are my people. All right. I hate the lawn mowing. I have this buddy who he says lawn mowing is when he thinks. He just gets out there and he's mowing and he's behind the mower and he's like, I just do a lot of thinking when I'm out there. And I'm like, I just do a lot of like, I'm just angry the whole time that I'm mowing. It's terrible. I hate it. It's funny because you guys don't know this, but when I lived in Kansas, we had a really big yard. And so I had to get a zero turn mower, but we're not rich people. And so I bought it off of Facebook Marketplace, which is a terrible place to buy a lawnmower, evidently. And so I bought it. The guy, it was super cheap. And the guy was like, oh, it runs really great. And I was like, all right, well, cool. Thanks. Can I try it? And he said, yeah, you can try it. So I get out on this. I've never driven a zero turn in my life. And I'm like, and it's like going like, and I was like, hey, thanks, man. It looks like it drives fine. Cause I've never driven on one before. And I take it home and I'm driving through our yard like this. And I figure out that the zero turn was broken. It didn't work right. So I didn't get to mow with it for weeks as I order parts and I fix it. I order these parts, I fix the mower, and I'm not joking with you guys when I say that mower broke down every single time I mowed with it for an entire year. Like every time I mowed with it, it would break down. And so it broke down so much that it made it into all my sermons. I think the mower was in my sermons more than I was. Like, I mean, just like, it was all, so much so that when the church here was hiring me, do you guys know Sheila Owens, Mama Sheila? You guys know her? Yeah, give it, Sheila's awesome. Sheila called me the lawnmower guy. The lawnmower guy, she'd say, and when I came, she was like, don't talk about lawnmowers. And I was like, yes ma'am, anything you say, Miss Sheila, I will. So I get to Kentucky, it's time to start mowing, and I'm praying over the lawnmower. I'm like, Lord, please just heal my lawnmower. Don't let it break down in Kentucky. Let that be a Kansas thing. And for weeks, I was mowing my lawn. It was a joy. I would just fly around, whoosh, all my neighbors out there pushing with their lawnmower. I'm like, woo, look at this. And they're all looking at me like, oh, I wish I had a zero turn. And so I'm mowing one day, and I didn't pray before I mowed. I just didn't do it. I don't know why. I just left it there. I get on my mower, and I'm mowing, and you know your yard has some holes and stuff in it, and I'm hearing this, when every time I mow, and I'm like, ah, that's probably fine, it'll work itself out, you know, and I keep going, and I'm like, ah, it'll be all right, and then all of a sudden it happens, I'm going across the yard, full throttle, like, this thing is boogieing, and all of a sudden, no joke, the mower just went, boom, like slammed to a stop. I almost flew off the mower. Like it was not a safe thing. I stopped. I of course I don't get off to see what's wrong with it. I just think maybe it'll go in reverse. So I put it in reverse and it kind of stops it. Finally I get off to look at what happened to my mower, and when I look at it, I realize that the deck of the mower, a part has broken and the deck has fallen completely off the mower. And because I was going full throttle when it fell off, it dug into the ground and it bent it back a little bit. And like, it was stuck in the yard. I couldn't go backwards. I couldn't go forward. It was terrible. And so I'm here to tell you guys, I no longer have a lawnmower. I have a lawn ornament. All right. It is a terrible thing. See, I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about our spirituality and things in our own life. And I was thinking about how, if you want to know what something is, you guys know this to be true, right? If you want to know what something is, you look at what it produces, right? A lawnmower that can't mow your lawn, it's just a lawn ornament. Like, let me give you this one. Toilet paper is called toilet paper because it's the paper that we use when we're on the toilet. I just made you guys think about toilets. How gross is that? At church, that's what it is for, right? Lawnmower is the thing that we use to mow our lawn, right? The grass, yeah. Dang it. Ruined my whole sermon illustration. The grass mower, all right? The grass mower. if you want to know what something is, you look at what it produces. There is actually kind of a spiritual idea inside of that. If you're willing to take it and listen to it, there's a spiritual idea in there that you and I, there's something about us that tells you what somebody is based on what they do, right? Jesus actually was very clear about this. Let me take you to this. In Matthew chapter 7, verse 16 through 20, he says it this way. They didn't have lawnmowers back then, or otherwise he'd have probably used that illustration. Instead, he uses this one. You ready for it? He says this, by their fruit, you'll recognize them. Now, what he's talking about, the context here, is he's talking about people who are coming and teaching and bringing ideas, people who are claiming to be followers of him, who maybe you look at and you go, I just am not sure. And what Jesus is saying is there is a way to look at somebody who claims to be a follower of him and to know whether they actually are or not. Did you know that? Did you know it's not just that somebody can claim that they're a follower of Jesus and that you have to bite on and go, oh yeah, I see that. There has to be something else involved there. And this is what he says. By their fruit, you will recognize them. That's the metaphor he's using. Fruit, trees. Then he says this. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes? Can you imagine that? Like, you go out for this outing with your children. We're going to go pick some grapes, kids. And they're like, ow, trying to. No, you don't pick grapes from thorn bushes because grapes don't grow on thorn bushes. They grow on vines, right? It says, or do you pick figs from thistles? Fig, it's a little fruit that they have over in Israel. It's kind of tasty, but think of it as oranges or apples. Do you pick those from a thorn bush, from a thistle? Verse 17, he says this. Likewise, every good tree, and I'm going to just tell you, what he's about to say here is so simple, but it's so incredibly profound. It's so simple that it may even sneak under your radar and you'll miss how profound it is. Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit. Makes sense, right? If the root of a tree is good, and it's the kind of tree that bears fruit, if it's a good tree, it's going to bear good fruit. But a bad tree, well, a bad tree bears bad fruit. It says a good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Did you hear that? Jesus is saying that there is something that is required of us, that we actually live out what we claim to believe. That you can't just say you're a good tree and that's enough. Well, I'm a good tree. No, it's not enough to just say you're a good tree. There has to be good fruit that comes out of it, right? And you don't try to produce the fruit. It just is who you are. If you have a good root, then it's going to produce good fruit. And Jesus says that a bad tree can't bear good fruit. A good tree can't bear bad fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit, it's cut down and thrown into the fire, which I think is a harrowing thought. And Jesus is saying what every one of us knows. What do you call the person who grows stuff at an orchard? I called it an orchard farmer in the first service. I don't think that's right, but an orcharder, is that right? An orcharder looks, try saying that three times fast. An orcharder looks at the fruit of the tree. And if there's no fruit on an apple tree first season, you know what he does? He thinks about it. Jesus even tells a parable about this. Maybe he digs around and fertilizes it. Second season, there's no fruit. Third season, there's no fruit. You get five or six seasons in and there's no fruit. Do you know what the orcharder is going to do? They're going to chop that tree down and they're going to use that apple wood to smoke their pork chops. That's what they're not going to keep trying to produce on a tree that won't produce. And this is what Jesus is saying. And then he says this, thus by their fruit, you will recognize them. Can I ask you guys a question? Have you ever known someone who is worried about whether they were saved or not? You ever known somebody who's like you, it's late at night, you're driving back from a work thing, you're a Christian, you guys are talking about your faith, and they're like, can I just be honest with you? Sometimes I wonder if I'm even saved. Have you ever had that conversation? Maybe. Question? Anybody ever had that question? You just struggled with sin, you've struggled with things in your life, you just look at it and you go, sometimes I just wonder if I'm even saved. Jesus makes it really simple for us, right? Jesus makes it uber simple for us. He tells us that your fruit tells me everything I need to know about your root, right? If you have good fruit, then you must be a good tree. If you have bad fruit, then you must be a bad tree. Now, if I could just real quickly take a little pressure off of you, because if you ask that question and you've worried about it, first of all, the scripture says there's nothing that can separate you from the love of Jesus. Like, if you are loved by him and you've accepted him, you are loved by him. There's nothing that can separate you. But can I also say this? I think if you're the kind of person who's asking the question, am I saved, and you have accepted Jesus and you've repented and you've done those things, like you've believed, you confessed, if you've done those things and you're asking that question, that is a piece of good fruit in your life. That you're actually looking at yourself and saying, am I reflecting him? Am I that person? Even if you struggle, can I just say this? Even if you struggle with sin, like I have struggled terribly with sin since I've fallen in love with Jesus, doesn't mean that I'm not saved. Just means I'm a sinner who's been saved by grace who still struggles sometimes. Same for you, all right? So let's just take that off the table. But I do think it's important that we also still are willing to evaluate our life, because the reality is you cannot do anything to earn grace, right? There is nothing that you can do to earn God's grace. Jesus gave it to you freely. He died on the cross for you freely. But can I tell you this? While grace is opposed to earning, grace is not opposed to effort. Can I say that again? Grace is opposed to earning, but it is not opposed to effort. It is not opposed to you participating with Jesus in your life and trying to live and be more like him. Thus, in our mission statements, it's advancing the kingdom by living for God. That there is some effort in your life that reflects fruit in your life. Makes sense to you? And that you would love people. So here's the question. If your fruit tells me everything I need to know about your root, how do you know what your fruit is? How do you know what your fruit is? Can I just quick illustration. When I was a youth pastor, I would tell my teenagers, because one of the big topics you talk about with teenagers is dating and all the stuff that goes along with that. And so I would talk to my teenagers and I'd say, here's the deal. You guys need to try and date Christians, people who are Christ followers. Because one, the scripture talks about that, about giving your, like not being yoked together with unbelievers. But I think we all know people who, even if they married somebody who wasn't a Christian, that person came to Christ, you can admit at least, right, that it would have been easier and better if both of you had been Christians at the outset, right? I mean, we can all just admit that that's the truth. It would have been better. And so I would talk to kids about that. And then I would come to youth group and there would be this girl who was on fire for Jesus. And I'd see her there and she'd be sitting with this boy who, like, you ever seen those boys that you're like, that kid is trouble, right? Like I'd be like, what are you doing with her? And she'd be like, well, he's a Christian. He goes to church. And I'd be like, he's a Christian? And I'm not judgmental. Please don't think that. But I, like this kid, I would look at him. I go, man, I don't think she's making you ever been concerned for a teenager? And I asked her, I said, what's going on? And she said, well, I asked him if he's a Christian, and he said yes. and I realized that was the standard I'd given these kids. Does somebody claim to be a Christian? And so I went back and I actually wrote up these series of questions that were just types of questions. And I said, here's the deal. From now on, I don't want you guys to look for people who are Christians. I want you to look for people who exhibit a life that looks like a Christian. So, for instance, one of the questions was, how do they treat their mom and their siblings? Do they treat them the way you would want, like, a dad to treat your children someday? Are they the kind of person who, if they have the opportunity, would cut in line, right? Because they're teenagers. Would cut in line if they had the opportunity. Are they that kind of person? And I started getting them to ask the types of questions that looked at the fruit instead of what the fruit claimed to be. Because here's the deal. You guys know it as well as I do. There are all kinds of trees out there that claim to be Christians that have a bunch of plastic fruit on them. Right? Some of you grew up in homes like that where the tree just had plastic fruit. It wasn't real. There was no nutrition in it. There was nothing real about it. It looked good until you tried to bite into it. You know that everybody at your church thought your parents were really great. It looked good, but you knew what was going on at home. So here's the question. How do you know what kind of fruit, like if you have this fruit in your life? I'll tell you this. The Bible calls this walking in the light. You should, if you've never done it, go read the book of 1 John. It's crazy short. A book is just a short letter. Like 3-4 pages, all right? But go read it, because John is a guy who actually walked with Jesus. He lived with him. And what John says in the book of 1 John, it'll have a number 1 in front of it. What John says in 1 John is that we should walk as Jesus walked. And he calls this walking in the light. It is that your life would reflect him. You ever walked in the dark and bumped your knees on, like, oh man, like you stubbed your toe? Oh man, like, you've ever wanted to cuss, that's the moment, right? You stub your toe in the middle of the dark and you're like, argh! Like, that's the moment, because you're in the dark and you're stumbling around. And what John says is, he uses this illustration that when you walk with Jesus, you're walking in the light. It is when your life, when you walk in the light, will start to bear fruit. So what I want us to do today is look at some things about how do you know if you're bearing that fruit that will help you learn how to start walking in the light. Would that be helpful? Everybody good with that? Okay, so here's the answer to whether you walk in the light, show the fruit, is this. It's not the question of what you claim to be, but what you actually are, right? So what we're going to look at is not what you claim to be, but what you actually are. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to do 3 questions to help you identify good fruit, okay? So these are 3 questions that will help you identify good fruit. Here's the first one. What does your time say about your love for the people of God? Let me say it again. What does your time? Some of you are like, time, what? Like, you are all over the place. Lawnmowers and fruit, and now we're on to time. Like, what in the world? What does your time say about your love for the people of God? Could I just take a moment and explain this? You might not know this, but every single week, there are, I would say weekly, there are hundreds and hundreds of man hours that go into loving people at this church. Like, for instance, you don't know this, but this week, Dean came in because a lot of our stage lights were out and needed replaced, and there's still a few that need replaced. And so Dean came in and got up on a lift for hours, changing out lights, hot up there, sweaty. He's doing that, you know why? Not because Dean needs more lights, but so that when you're in here, you have a comfortable experience being able to participate and watch online. Did you know somebody does that kind of stuff here? Did you know that there are these incredible people who come in every single week and they design and make their own cards, our card ministry? Do you know about this? And has anybody ever gotten a card from people at our church? Yeah. If you don't know about this, if you're new, let me just tell you. If you have somebody that needs prayer, if you have somebody that needs a little bit of extra love, you need a little bit extra love. You can share with our staff, share with these card ladies, and we'll get it to the right people, and they'll start praying over you. They'll send encouraging cards. My nephew in Kansas gets a card from these ladies. Like, makes me want to tear. I was just thinking about it. Like, that's crazy. These people come. You know what the most valuable thing you have is, my guess anyway? It's your time, right? That's the thing you protect like crazy. And these ladies come in and they design up these cards and they create them and they make them themselves with a lot of love, and they pray over them and they send them out every single week. There are people who come in here and they're a part of our pastoral care team. And they come and they pray over all kinds. If you have a need in our church, if you're going to the hospital or something, let us know. We'll get it to the pastoral care team. They'll call you. They'll check on you. They'll make sure you're doing okay. They'll pray with you. They'll even come visit if it's okay because of COVID rules. They just love people like crazy. We have an outreach team that goes and sprinkles people, gets up early on Sunday mornings and leaves donuts on there and creates big activities to love on neighborhoods and make a difference in people's lives. We have a quilt ministry. We have people who are changing diapers in nurseries. Changing diapers. We have all kinds of things happening in this church. People on our security team who you don't even know it, but are walking around this church right now, just making sure that it's a secure environment and it's safe for you and your family to worship in here. That's crazy. Thousands and thousands of man hours every single year. Why? Because they love you. They want you to be able to be in here and not have to worry. And they love people in our community, and they want to make a difference in our community. Their time is spent loving people for God. And they're not perfect. They would be the first ones to tell you that. I'm not perfect. Can I just ask this question for you? What about you? What would your time say if somebody were to look at your time log for your life? You kept a diary of all your time. What would your time say about your love for the people of God and his mission? What would it say? What does the way you spend your time say about your walk with Jesus? See, I think I'm probably going to ask more questions today than give a lot of answers, but I hope that you'll actually do the hard work of answering these questions. And I'm going to say this at least twice in the sermon. My goal is not to make you feel guilty, all right? So if you're sitting there going, oh, stop, Kent, you're stomping on my chest. I'm not trying to make you feel guilty. I'll really swing around to that at the end and help you with that. But please, for now, just as an adult, look at your life and think through these questions. Do I really do a good job of that? Is my life reflecting what I really want it to be? Because I'll say this to you. This whole idea about using your time to reflect your heart for God's kingdom and reflect your heart for his people, it isn't about doing more. Can I say that again? Because some of you, how many of you need more to do in life? Raise your hand if you need, because I have a lot of projects. Can't see any, nobody's raising you dogs. All right. Nobody needs more to do, right? None of us need more to do. This isn't about you doing more. It's about you being more intentional with what you're doing. Can I say that again? Because that is so, like, memorize that idea. This isn't about you doing more. It's about you being more intentional with what you're doing. You spend a lot of time doing stuff. You're already going to go fishing. What if you started inviting people to come fish with you who don't know Jesus? Not so you could share the Roman road with them and be like, well, I don't know if you knew this, but Paul in the Romans chapter 3. Don't do that. Just love them. Be friends with them. Care about them. Engage them. And then when God opens the door to share your story, we're going to talk about this in August more, but when God opens the door to share your story. Talk about it with them. But some of you already fish. This isn't about doing more. Just start taking people fishing with you. Some of you already coach baseball. It isn't about doing more. Just start thinking of ways that you could engage those families. Maybe for you, it's just as simple as every week you're going to write one of the kids on your baseball team a little encouraging note. Hey, Johnny, man, you are really killing it out there. I'm so proud of you. I'm so excited about what is happening in your life, and I pray for you every day. Whoa, what? I could do that? Yeah. What if you just, like, didn't try to add more into your life, but you were more intentional with what you do with it? I will say this, for some of you, it does mean you need to stop doing some stuff. It means you need to cut back because your life is so overwhelmed and you have no ability to say no to anybody that you're not able to say yes to the right things. Because whenever you say yes to something, I promise you this, you are saying no to something else. And so some of you need to learn to manage your time a little bit better so that you can say yes to the right things that are the kind of things you want to be about in life. I will say this to you, loving others well will take a significant investment of time. I promise you that. If you're going to love others well, Jesus, for 3 years, you get this? He invested 3 years with these guys before setting them loose. He didn't just give them a 15-minute training course and then say, all right, you got it. 3 years, long, painstaking investment. There's one of my favorite passages is Jesus, these guys ask him a question, and he goes, are you still so dumb? Look it up. Look up the word dull and you'll find it. It cracks me up. Jesus, 3 years he's waiting. Come on. I'm going away soon. You better get it, right? He spends time with them because to love others well, it takes significant time. Second one is this. Second question that you can ask to see how your fruit life is. What does your treasure say about your love for the people of God? What does your treasure say? Right? We did time. I think for most Americans, that's one of our most valuable things that we have. Second most, our treasure. What is your bank account? If you were to open up your online banking today and go through it, what would it show about what matters to you? Huh? I want to tell you a quick story. There's a guy in our church who came to me a month ago, and he said, hey, Kent, what are you guys doing for Father's Day? I said, oh, we've been kicking a few ideas around. And he said, well, I would like to pay to have a knife forged for our church and for us to give that away and use it to try to just see if we could get some more guys. Like, we want to see men coming to know Jesus and affecting their whole family. What if we use that? And I said, well, that's a really great idea. How much was it cotton? He said, no, I'll take care of all of it. I'll do all of it. He told me, I feel like this is something God is calling me to do. Can I ask you a question? If you felt God calling you to go spend a lot of your own money to have a knife forged and to buy, he bought, there's all kinds of gift cards, all this stuff that he bought, do all that stuff to give it away, so not so that you could enjoy it, but so you could give it to somebody else to see somebody else's life transformed and lives changed. Would you be willing to submit to that call? Would you? Because if you're like me, it's hard. The older I get, the more curmudgeon-y I get. The more tight I am with my money. And I'm like, sure, you can have it. And I'm holding on to it. I'm like, any time now, just take it right now. I don't want to give it away because it's mine and I worked hard for it and I want it. And I'm telling you, for me personally, God has convicted me over this. Like, I was sitting outside the other day, just sitting out on our back patio, and I was looking around and I thought, we have so much. Most of us as Americans have so much. And I just was like, God, would you please just use whatever we have? It's yours. Use it for however you want to. What is your heart? Like, I'm not telling you I'm perfect to that. I'm telling you God is convicting me on this. When you're at Kroger and you see that single mom who's, she's telling the cashier, just put this back. Can you put these few things back? Are you the person who just pulls out your wallet and says, you know what? No, keep it all. I've got you. I've got you covered. Don't worry about it. What kind of person are you? What does your checking account say about you? When you see those homeless people, do you drive by? This is my favorite move. You guys do this too, right? Don't make eye contact, right? This is what we all do, isn't it? Don't make eye contact. You know what God has convicted our family of? This has been really hard for me. I'm just being honest with you. It's been really hard because I don't give money away in those situations because a lot of times somebody might use it for alcohol, but we have decided to start keeping $5 gift cards to McDonald's in our car. So when I see those people, I can be like, hey, would you like a meal on me? Here, it's yours. Just take it. Love you. God bless you. We'll be praying for you. Nothing. I don't try to make a big deal. I don't just give it away. I'm sharing it not to make me look good, but to tell you it's hard for me. That's not my natural bent. So what does your money say about you? Can I tell you real quickly a quick story that, oh man, just like almost terrifies me? Jesus in Matthew chapter 25, he's such a good storyteller. I wish I was as good at this as Jesus, because I am long-winded, but Jesus can just like make it like this, you know? Jesus is telling the story and he says, in the end of times, there will be two separate groups of people that come before me. There will be on the right side, my right side, there will be sheep. And on the left hand, there will be goats. He said, I'll separate the people out like they're sheep and goats, and I'll separate them into these two categories. He said, then I'll look at the sheep and I'll say, well done. Well done, my good and faithful servant. I was hungry. You put food in my mouth. I was thirsty and you held that cup of cool water to my lips and I drank deeply of it. I was sick. You came and sat by my hospital bed night after night. I was in prison. And you came and visited me. I was naked. I didn't know where I was even going to get clothes as winter was coming. And you put clothes on my back. Well done. And these people, they'll look at him, right? And Jesus says, they'll look at him and they'll go, I think you've got the wrong people. Like, I don't remember seeing you, Jesus. When did I do these things? I really appreciate it. I don't know that that was me. And he'll say, no, 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 no. Whenever you did this to the least of me, you did it. To the least of my brothers, you did it for me. He'll say, come and enter into life, enter into eternity. And he'll usher them in. Well done, well done. This is the part that is a little terrifying for me. He'll look at the goats on the left hand. I can't prove this, but I kind of picture him sighing, you know, when you're like, you guys, I was hungry. I was starving. You wouldn't make eye contact with me. Like, you wouldn't even give me eye contact. I was dying of thirst. You just left me thirsty. I was naked, man. You left me without clothes. I was sick. You didn't do anything. I was in prison. You didn't do anything. These people over here, you know, ex-Sunday school teachers, elders, like, I've gone to church my whole life. Jesus, I don't know what you're talking about. I thought we were good. He'll look at them and he'll say, whatever you didn't do for the least of these, you didn't do for me. You want to know where Jesus is? He is that homeless person. standing on the street corner. I am telling you, God has really convicted me of this. The last church that I worked in, we had a huge poor population around us, so we had a lot of people that came to our church, and I'm not joking, I became hard-hearted towards this, kind of like I was just a curmudgeon. I'd be like, no, you spend your money on cigarettes and booze, and I'm not going to help you or whatever. Like, I'm just being blatantly, like, way too truthful with you guys. A couple years ago, I was driving home from, our family takes a retreat once a year. Like, we just go, we shut everything down. We do vacation-y stuff one day, but the rest of the week, like, you just can't get a hold of me. We're just spending it with God and with each other. And so I'd been on this retreat, and God had been working in my heart about that. And I'm driving home, and I've got all this window time. Everybody's asleep. And I just started to realize that I had become a person who didn't say yes to the things Jesus would say yes to. And it broke my heart, because I would get up on a stage like this and preach, and I wasn't willing to say yes to him when he was the guy on the street. Right? Like, this looks good. This looks good on a resume when you get to heaven. Well, Jesus, I can stand on a stage and dance around like a monkey if you want, right? Nobody sees it when you hand a homeless person the card, when you pay for the single mom's food. Nobody sees it when you buy a family some food and take it over to them and just drop it off without them knowing about it. Nobody sees it when you give people groceries, when you see somebody in church and feel compelled to just walk up and give them $100 because you're like, I don't know what's going on, but I feel like God told me to do this. Nobody sees that stuff. But I'll tell you this. You and I need to sit up and take notice, because Jesus is noticing it all. And that is either going to be a glorious thing. That when Jenny and I first got married, I told her, I was like, when I do things that are right, you never notice, because they're just like, you know, if I'm doing it wrong, you get in trouble, right? But if you're doing it right, nobody's like, hey, you loaded the dishwasher today, right? You just loaded the dishwasher. You were supposed to do it. I struggled with that. Can I just, if you're that person who struggles with some recognition, Jesus is noticing it all. He sees the things you do in secret. He sees the good. He's watching for that fruit. But that is also a terrifying thing on the flip side. So I want to ask you this question. Is your life lived to lift others up or to fill yourself up? If we were to look at your bank account, is there anything that would reflect you doing something for somebody else, you giving away, you giving of yourself? Or does it all reflect filling yourself up? Third one. This will go quick. All right, here we go. Third one. What does the way you use your talents tell me about your love for the people of God? So we got time, treasure, and talents. What does the way you use your talents tell me? Now, you guys know in September, maybe you don't know this, but in September we're going to be launching small groups here. They used to be called connect teams. We're calling them connection groups, all right? So get that in your head. Connection groups is what we'll be talking about. And I'm super pumped about these. They're going to be based around the sermon. So whatever, you'll come to church and the sermon will kind of be your primer for your group. Because you'll go and you'll be talking about, like, you would talk about this sermon. And you'd say, man, when he talked about the treasure thing, that really got me. How do you guys handle that? And you'll actually get to discuss that with other believers, right? And so I've been working on that, but just like open book thing, I am terrible with details in life. I'm really good at this, like blah, big vision stuff. I'm terrible with details. So I went to my small group. We've been doing a pilot of these groups, and my small group has kind of fallen in love with it. And I said to these really talented people, I said, hey, would you guys consider helping me lead through this? Because I've got the idea, I've got kind of the basic structure and framework, but I need some talented people who would help me lead through this. And I asked them, I kind of pitched it, I gave them my best sales pitch, and I looked them all in the eye, and I said, will you guys help? And I took my drink, and then I set it down, and they all went, no, we won't. No, they didn't, I'm just kidding. I just, they totally said they would help, right? Because guess what? Guess what? The body of Christ is not like a person, it's a body. It is, the body of Christ is more than just a person. It's more than about Kent. It's more than about the person who leads worship. It is you all. Can I read this verse from Paul speaking in 1 Corinthians chapter 12? If you haven't read this letter, it's another fantastic letter to read. 1 Corinthians 12 specifically will really go into detail about this. I just want to give you this one verse where he highlights, he says, now you, the Corinthian church, are the body of Christ. You are. So in the last section, we learned that you can look at homeless people and see Jesus. Do you know where you can see his body? Look around this room real quick. Check out the names that are watching on Facebook real quick. Jesus' body is here. Jesus' work in this world is through you. That's how he chooses to interact with his creation, is through you. He chooses you. Now you are the body of Christ, and each one of you is a part of it. Jesus gave each of us to each other so that we could make a difference in the other's life. And I have these people who say, you know what, Kent? I'll give up my time to help organize the small group ministry and to make it happen. Isn't that crazy? People giving up of themselves for others? They're not doing it for themselves. They're doing it for you. So I have a quick pitch for you guys. Are you ready? And I'm going to take my drink. Here it is. We're starting small groups, connection groups in September. And guess what? I want 100% of our church to be involved in them. What? My group was like, Kent, that's kind of like a lot of people. I was like, yeah, 100%. Maybe 110%, all right? That's what I'm going for. So here's what that means. It means I need 20 to 30 people who are willing to help host and lead groups. Now, I'll say this for you. Hosting is real simple. It's like, I love to have people over to my house, so I'm willing to open my house up to 8 or 10 people and have them come over and use my house to meet as a group. And leading is, even simpler. We literally will give you, questions on a piece of paper, and you could show up to the group if you've heard the sermon. You can show up to the group because the sermon was all of your study material. And you can go, what did you think of Kent's sermon? Right? The questions are a little better than that. But it's super, super simple. And we're going to give these people training and give them coaching. We're going to work with those people. But here's my ask of you. I need 20 or 30 people who are willing to do this. And so I'm asking you guys to literally consider, could I put my talent to use? Some of you are fantastic with people. You just are a magnet. Why don't you open your home to be a host or a group leader? Some of you are leaders at work, and you know what it takes to kind of organize a group. Why don't you open your home? Some of you just love to have friends. Open up your home, lead a group. Some of you know how to do public speaking. Open your home, lead a group. If you can talk or have hands, you can lead a group, right? So help lead a group. So here's what we're going to do. On July 11th, I'm going to do an informational meeting go into a little bit more detail. What does it mean to lead a group? What does it mean to host a group? And I'm asking you guys to consider signing up to be at that meeting. If you can't be at that meeting, just let us know, and I'll get in contact with you and talk to you separately, individually. But I'm asking you to consider being a group leader today, being a host of a group today. And so what you can do is, on your way out, some of my small group are going to be at the connection group area. That's where all the TVs are out. As you walk out, you'll see the TVs. They're going to be there to sign you up to be for this meeting on July 11th, all right? And I'm asking all of you, I would love if we had more than 30, that would be stinking awesome, to consider hosting a group, consider leading a group. Because I guarantee you, when you start to give yourself away to other people, it will be one of the most impactful things you've ever done. It's how God chooses to work in this world. So I'm asking you, consider giving your talents. When you leave today, go sign up to get some more information about leading a group. All right. I promise you that'd be it, and that's it. Let me close with this. I'm sitting there. My mower's broken. I'm standing off of it. And I handled it just like all of you would handle this situation, right? I looked at it, and I was like, you are a terrible mower. You are the worst mower in all of history of mowers. You never work. You always cut out on me. You always break. You're the worst thing I've ever seen. I just wish you knew how to work as a mower, right? That's not what I did. That's dumb, all right? I know I'm kind of a nerd, but you know what I did do? I took the mower, and I got some wire, and I wired up the deck underneath it. And then I kind of hobbled it up into my shed, and I jacked it up, and I ordered some parts, and I started taking it apart. And then I got down on the ground. You guys I wish I'd had a camera of this or something. I'm pushing against the tire, and I'm pulling on the deck, trying to bend it back into place, right? And I'm bending it back, and I'm getting the new parts, and I'm putting the new parts, and I'm fixing it up. I leveled it all out. Man, I took that bad boy out, and I started mowing. My grass is perfect. It's beautiful. All my neighbors, I'm woo, cruising. All the neighbors oh, I wish I had, I'm just, oh, it looks so good now. I took it out. Can I just real quickly say to you, because some of you, I was hyper aware as I wrote this sermon, This is the kind of sermon that could leave you feeling guilty. I just don't do enough. I'm not good enough. I wish I was more. That's not the purpose of this. Don't just sit there and feel guilty. If your life doesn't reflect the fruit, first of all, if it does reflect the fruit, good night. That's amazing. Keep living your life for Jesus in that way. But if you're looking at your life and you go, if I'm honest, I don't know that my life has really reflected that fruit lately. My time has all been about me. My treasure has all been about me. My talent has all been about me. If that's the case, don't sit there and feel guilty. Go to the Maker and let Him make you. Go to the one who knows how to restore and repair and to fix you. The one who knows how to help you learn to walk in the light. Go to Him. Because He knows how to take your brokenness. He knows how to, because oftentimes what I found in my life is when I have bad fruit in my life, it's not because I want bad fruit. It's because there's something still down in my root that comes from my old life that I haven't died to. That I haven't taken before Jesus and gone, Jesus, I need to lay this on the altar before You. So do some of the hard work today. We're going to take a moment and go to communion. And this next song, you guys know you'll get up. There's tables along the side. There's communion there. There's offering boxes. You can leave your offering. But this is the time where you engage with Jesus. You remember His sacrifice for you. And when you go to Him, could I encourage you? Don't go saying, Jesus, I'm just going to do better. Jesus, I'm going to be better. I'm going to start giving my time. I'm going to give my treasure. I'm going to give my talents. Jesus, I'm going to do better. Don't do that. Go to Him if you're feeling kind of pricked in your heart and say, Jesus, would You start to restore me? Would You help me to look really deep into my heart and my life and my past, the things that I need to look at that I haven't surrendered to You, I need to give to You? Because what I'm finding, Jesus, is I still have this old sin habit. My heart has grown hard towards the poor. God, I'm super protective of my time. I told my group the other day that I've decided that when my kids ask me for a bite of their food, I'm going to give them a bite of my food. Because I got to the point where I have four kids, and they'd be like, all of them, can we have a bite of your food? And by the time they were done, I would have like a bite left. And I'd be like, oh, you dogs, right? You ever felt that as a parent? I felt God was like, Kent, that's like a foothold in your life of you not being generous. And I'll just tell you, one of the values that as a staff we've come up with is that we want to be shockingly generous as a church, as people, as leaders. And I'm like serious about that stuff. When I say it from up here, I want you to know this is who Kent is off the stage too. So I know it may seem silly, but now when my kids ask me for a bite, I give them a bite. I just do. It's because there was something inside of me that Jesus needed to work on. I'm telling you today, this sermon was not to make you feel guilty. If you felt that, move past that. Be an adult, move past it. This sermon was to say, if you feel that, maybe you just need to invite Jesus into some places in your life and start working and actually go to Him. The thing that He offers is the most unique thing in all of every religion everywhere. Is that He offers not just to fix your world, not for you to come and follow a lot of rules. He offers Himself to you. That when you are in the middle of loneliness, when you are in the middle of dysfunction, when you're in the middle of brokenness, He doesn't offer, oh, I'll fix it all. What He says is, I will come and I will take up residence in you. I will make a tent in your heart and I will live there. I will be with you. That He walks with it through you. And boy, howdy, some of you today, what you need is not just to get some new parts fixed. You need a complete makeover of your entire life. You need restoration made brand new by the Creator of the universe who longs to come and walk with you. He wants to walk with you. So if that's you, if you're somebody who goes, good night, I don't know what to do with this. I feel like, whew, man. I would invite you to come up and talk with me. Talk with one of the people who'll be up here along the stage. We would love to share with you how you can follow Jesus and how He could restore you and make you new. And you could start that journey today. Don't miss it. We're going to stand, we're going to sing this song, and we're going to invite Jesus to build our life. And during this next song is your time to go and partake of communion. It's your time to come and pray if you want to come up here and pray. It's your time to come and talk to somebody if you need to talk to somebody. Will you guys stand with us? This is your time to do some business with Jesus.